What's up, my storage investors? It's Chris here, host of the Storage Investor Show. Hope you guys are doing well today. Our guest is Mark Helm. He is the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, one of the first books I ever purchased on investing in self-storage back in the day, probably been about a couple of years now. Anyway, Mark is an expert in the storage industry. He's been around for quite some time. He writes about it. He makes YouTube videos about it. And he not only talks the talk, but he walks the walk. He's acquiring a portfolio of properties, or actually accumulating a portfolio of properties worth over $60 million. So he's been in it for quite some time, knows what he's talking about. I hope you guys really enjoy this episode on self-storage conversions. Before we jump into it, two things real quick. It's a repurposed episode from my YouTube channel. So this was filmed about a year and a half ago, but the content is evergreen. So it's going to help you out in your self-storage investing journey. And last thing, stay tuned for the Storage Investor Summit, or the Self-Storage Investor Summit, coming March 2021. I'll have more information for you in the days and weeks ahead. All right, without further delay, let's jump right into it with Mark. Mark, thank you for being here. If you can get us a little bit of your background, how you got into self-storage, how long have you been in it, and what your plan is going forward in the industry.
Oh, very good. Well, it's great. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much, Chris. my background, I came into self-storage through the real estate industry. I'm a commercial broker, a CCIM. And in the mid-90s, I was primarily in the office business. I did a lot of brokering of all types of deals, but I had a property management company. And I had a client list of clients, and they would buy office buildings. We broker the deals, and we manage them, lease them, and reposition them, and eventually sell them. So I was, I had employees and a whole team, and it would not be unusual to, when a space became vacant, to rent that space out. We set a dumpster up. We maybe have tear out all the walls or half of them, rebuild it. Mm-hmm. And we were good at managing, but I saw that the owners could have a great NOI year, but actually have to put money in the deal because of all the capital improvements. Then I got a call from a director of a self-storage REIT. And ask if I could help him find self-storage in the Louisville market. And of course, if you ask a broker, can you help me find real estate? There's usually one answer. And that was yes.
That's right.
And so I related to storage. It sounded like a kind of a quaint little silly little business, but I was going to help him find it. And when I got out and started working with him and really saw the numbers, and got what self-storage was. It had all the benefits of commercial real estate, but it didn't have hardly any of the drawbacks with the capital improvements that my customers experienced. So that's how I got into it. I tried to figure out what I could do to get into the business.
Interesting. That was in the 90s, you said. Is that right?
Yeah. Excuse me one minute. Got a little bug here. Yeah, that was in the mid-90s. And I worked with this company probably for about 3 years and brokered a number of deals. And what I got to see was how they analyzed it. And I got to see how the properties performed over time. And by 98, 99, I thought, man, this is perfect. How can a guy like me get in this business? So I did what I know how to do, which is find the deals. Then I put it under contract, and then I went out and raised back then the 20% equity and closed on the deal and put together a portfolio pretty quick. And what ended up happening about 3 years later, a private REIT came by and wrote a unsolicited offer, and I was out of the business as quick as I was in it. And then it took me about three or four more years to reorganize and then come back into it.
Interesting. So they made that private REIT made you an offer. The investors wanted to sell. So you were kind of, okay, we're going to have to sell this.
I had to sell the way we were organized at that point. And they were showing, we were in years two and three on the project, but they were offering prices that were what I had projected it'd be worth in year eight, nine, and 10.
Oh, wow.
So the investors said, sell it.
So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. At that point, that's what we had to do.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to argue.
I'm organized a little differently now.
Okay, good deal. So let's dive a little bit further into that. So you'd said that you saw how great it was compared to office and some other things that you were doing. For the smaller investor, you and I both know that self-storage is a wonderful business to be in based on experience. But for somebody watching this who doesn't know, what are some reasons that they should consider, strongly consider self-storage over other asset classes?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, but basically what I saw was that in essence, what you have is a steel wall and a concrete floor. That's what self-storage is. And there's another type of commercial real estate that has steel walls and concrete floors, and that's warehouse. And in the 90s, when I first got going, warehouse was renting for about $350 a foot. And self-storage back then was generating between $950 and $1050 a foot. Climate control was about $12 a foot. And I thought, holy mackerel, how could that be? So what we see is you get apartment, or I was managing B-class office. We were getting the same kind of rents in storage that you get in B-class office. But there's very few capital improvements. When a tenant moves out, there's no commissions to pay. You're not doing tenant improvements. I'm not replacing carpet. I'm not unplugging toilets. And what I saw was that the cash flow was very, I don't want to say easy, but it was, you could project the cash flows very accurately in self-storage. And what few capital improvements there are, I mean, we budget between 12 and 15 cents a square foot per facility and use that as a reserve fund. And we rarely have to ever dive into the operating income for a capital expense. You know, we had a $60,000 sign blow down, and I went into that reserve fund, got the $10,000 deduction for our insurance claim. In the month we put that sign up, our investors didn't miss a lick.
Okay.
Gotcha. Didn't miss a lick. And that's why for a small investor like myself, it is a fantastic business.
Exactly. Okay. So from what I hear what you're saying, you can get really good rents. The cash flow is more predictable. The building itself, the maintenance on the building, the upkeep of the building, it's very straightforward. It's like you said, a concrete floor and a metal sides. It doesn't get less complicated than that for the most part. And then you can budget pretty well as far as your capital expenditures going forward. You kind of have very few things that will go wrong. Whereas in a situation like an office, multifamily, whatever, you could have any number of things go wrong, pipes burst, et cetera. People don't like each other. Cops get called at apartments, that sort of thing. So it's a little bit easier on the brain to manage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a business. It's an operating, ongoing business. But most people don't know it is the least foreclosed on real estate asset there is.
That's excellent. That's excellent. That's a good point. Yeah, that's one I often forget as well. But yeah, that's really, yeah, you don't see them come up for auction like you see other potential property.
The few that I have in our market, more than half of them, they didn't even have a problem. They were additional collateral for the retail strip center in the front that did have a problem.
Yep.
So I've seen very few. And if there is a self-storage facility that isn't performing and it's going to auction, odds are I don't want it.
Yeah, I see. That's interesting.
Got a fundamental problem.
Yeah, that's interesting. Very good point. Very good point. Okay. How does the smaller investor get started? So if you have someone who's no longer on the fence, they say, yes, this looks good. I want to get involved in this. How do they go about it? I get some questions like that. Where do I begin? How would you recommend that smaller investor begin their self-storage journey?
Great question. A lot depends on where you are in the country and where you are in the particular real estate cycle. But what we've seen is since the recession, Great Recession, they call it, storage performed very well. It was one of the top three. The other two fantastic performing assets during the recession were office, medical office, and student housing, both of which are very capital intensive. I mean, you could spend 200 plus per square foot building that product. Storage is 50 to 75 a foot.
Yeah, much less.
I'm talking institutional grade self-storage. But that brought a lot of institutional money into the self-storage space, and prices, as everyone sees, are very high. So it's hard to buy an existing facility and make the numbers work for small investors like us to get the kind of returns that we need to make it worth our while. Mm-hmm. But what we can do, and what I teach people to do, is you can do value add plays. And typically the value add plays that I recommend and that we do are expansions and conversions. Buying a mom and pop type facility and then doubling its size and taking it from a mom and pop to a something a REIT would look at, or take our recycling an existing building. Most people don't realize this. We spend a lot of time talking about REITs, but REITs really only own about 20% of the self-storage facilities. This is still a mom-and-pop industry. And over the next decade, what percent of those properties you think are going to come to the market?
You're right.
A lot of opportunities.
Yes.
62% of all self-storage facilities are owned by someone who just owns one.
Yeah.
So a lot of opportunity. That's the play that I would do now. Now, the thing is, these aren't home runs. It's hard to, you know, you're not going to double your money in 2 to 3 years. What we're getting are very solid returns. For example, when we do expansions, we'll buy a building for $1 million and maybe spend another $1 million to create more space. So we have $2 million in it. When we hit stabilized occupancy, it might be worth $3.8 million. And what we're seeing is over a 10-year hold, we're seeing internal rates of return of about 20%. So if you put a 25% down payment down over a 10-year period, you're going to make about 20% on that $1 million. But the cash flows are fantastic in this business. And we have seen in some submarkets where a lot of new product comes online, we've seen our occupancy rates go down. But I've never seen and don't know anybody who's had a project that went from 90% to 60% or 70%. You may lose 5 to 10%, but I've never seen one just disappear.
Okay.
And even in the recession, the average was only an 8% drop.
Wow. Okay. I see what you're saying. So yes. So the smaller investors should not look at this as if it were some sort of get rich quick scheme.
But, exactly.
Okay. But the returns and the cash flow is a very real thing, and you don't have to be quite as concerned, although you should be aware, but you don't have to be quite as concerned about drops in occupancy, et cetera. When you're looking at deals, your rental rate increases. Let's talk about that for a second.
Good.
And how that works in self-storage. Because typically, when you underwrite maybe a multifamily deal or whatever, you put in, you know, 3-5%. And on a apartment unit, you know, that could be $30 to $50. How does it look in self-storage? And do you see, how does that look?
Well, what I do in my underwriting is I use a 3% per year average increase in income. Now, if you think about it, you've got a 10 by 10 that's $100. That now means 103. We rarely lose people from a price increase. And we make sure, now there have been some years and some projects where I've gone a year and maybe not had a price increase. But overall, our average is well above 3%. It's closer to 6%. But we underwrite it at 3, and we underwrite our operating expenses at 2.5%. So, because inflation's been about 2.5% over the last decade. So as an owner, the real art is to know how much your income is going up as a percentage over your operating expenses. Because what happens is that, at least on the pro forma, but also in real life, that 0.5% compounds. And that's why we can make 20% on our money over a time period because that gap in the income going up over expenses compounds. And that's how we underwrite them. Now, in reality, this last 12 months, we did average in our portfolio about 3.2% increase. Before that, since 2012, we've been averaging 5.7% per year annual increase. Although we only underwrite it at 3, but that's not a hard number to hit, believe me.
To your point, $100 to $103 is not, nobody's probably going to get a bat an eye. Nobody will call their friends and let's go move out of this unit and move to the one down the road that's charging about the same amount. So that's an excellent point on the rent. So you'd mentioned earlier on for the smaller investor, they can start looking for the existing with the expansion capacity or maybe a ground up. It might be a little bit harder to wrap their heads around. But what about the conversions? And just to let people know, I heard Mark speak on this topic at Inside Self Storage earlier this year. I thought it was one of the best presentations at the entire event because Mark actually went through a case study on a conversion that he and his team did. And I want to talk, we won't get into too many details on that case study, but I just want to talk about conversions for a second and why you like them so much and what the opportunity is there in that space for self storage.
Well, I like conversions because one, you can get to market very quick as opposed to building one. When you build it, you've got to get all your approvals. You've got to do all of the site work. And very often, especially in today's market, it's probably a year and a half before you're renting units on a ground up kind of green space construction project. Mm-hmm. With a conversion, we can be getting income in 6 months. As long as the building's zoned, and we wouldn't buy it if it wasn't zoned, for self-storage. The other thing that's beautiful about it is that in most cases, at least the conversions we've done, we've been able to take per square foot income and convert it into cubic foot income. So in other words, if we've got a warehouse that's above 16.8 clear span, I can put two stories of self-storage inside. If you got a 50,000 square foot building, you're going to get about a 75% efficiency. But in other words, 25% is going to be common areas and office and restroom and hallways. But I can get 75% of that space generating income, then I can get two floors of 75%.
Okay.
That's a great product. You're buying per square foot and converting it into cubic foot income.
That's really interesting. So as long as you have the ceiling clear height, like you said, 16.8, then you can go ahead and try to get, you can look at doing a second level in there and doubling, almost doubling, not quite doubling, but obviously expanding the footprint of the potential.
We've done a number of single story too. Also, it is the, if you're doing single story or the top level of a multi-level building where you're putting the deck in, that is the least expensive storage system you'll buy because there's no weight bearing at all. There's no ceiling it's supporting. It's all light gauge steel. And we can get our cost per square foot to have the system fabricated is generally less than the conversion. That's usually the lowest cost of any type of storage system.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And if you think about it, most of the time, it's almost all or a high percentage of it at climate control.
Yes.
Get more for climate control. So for the calories burned in terms of construction and lease up, which the income you're going to get and ultimately the value you're going to create is generally much higher on a conversion than something that's 50% non-climate control and 50% climate control.
Okay, that's wonderful. So it sounds like conversions are awesome. Two questions on that. One is, actually three. One is, how does one start looking for a conversion opportunity? Where do you go to find that information? Is it a broker website or do you just start driving around? Or what's the best way to look for conversion deals?
Well, great question. It depends on where you're doing the conversions. So, for example, if you're in the city where you live, you can drive yourself and look for them, or find a good commercial real estate broker. I mean, it won't cost you anything to use a broker in most cases to help you find a building that you can convert to storage. But just like you're buying an existing or you're building from ground up, when you're doing a conversion, what you want to really have your arms around, is it a good location? In other words, I don't want to say you have to be in a retail location, but I teach people to think about self-storage like a retail business. What are the car counts? Is it easy for customers to get in? Our managers, you know, they have some benchmark numbers to hit monthly, but they relate to themselves more like running a store than they do as property managers on real estate. So the location of where that is really important. So you want the same type of location of any type storage. Also, you need to know before you spend a lot of money and a lot of time on any particular conversion, is that submarket ripe for more space hitting it? Ultimately, everyone I work with, I advise them to get a feasibility report, and that will really quantify how much of a gap supply and demand there really is. But now there's a number of resources out there where you can get a glimpse into that submarket to know the per square foot per capita of existing supply.
Yes, yes.
What's in the pipeline. That's critical today as we move, as so much product, new product has hit the market.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. What are last two questions? What are the pitfalls, I guess, or some things you should look out for on a conversion deal? Just because there seems like there's some things that could go wrong there. What should we be aware of?
Another great question. Typically on a conversion, it's a little harder to phase in the construction than it is if you're just doing ground up or doing expansion. If I'm building four buildings 20 or 35 feet wide, I can put two or three buildings up at a time, and I'm never that far ahead of myself. In other words, I'm not servicing interest on a lot of unleased units. Little harder to do that in a conversion. Now, on the case study we talked about, we put the first floor down and then the deck. Now, we didn't build out the second floor. That's the way we staggered that project coming into service. But you really need to know what you think that submarket's going to rent up at, and what is the gap between supply and demand, because it's a little more difficult to phase in on a conversion.
Okay, wonderful. And then general price per foot on a conversion, what have you seen in the market at this point in the cycle?
Well, good question. A lot depends on what market you're in. What does it cost to buy the existing building? In today's market, and again, I like conversions because it's probably some of the least amount of money you'll spend. We're spending between $37 a square foot and $42 a square foot, not including the building we're buying, for conversion. Now, we're building really nice, you know, what I think is really nice stuff. We build a product that a REIT would consider buying. So okay. We try to do it real nice. I could do it less expensive. I could also do it more expensive.
Okay.
But we're trying to get in for, in most parts of the country, we want to get in $60 per square foot or less.
Okay, gotcha. And that does not include the price of the building or the
No, land? That does. The 60 does.
Oh, 60 does. Okay.
Include the building. On that case study we looked at, we were in at like $32 a foot. And back then it was about $35 a foot, I think, to do the conversion. So
okay, wonderful.
A little over 60, but it worked.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful. That's amazing. Well, Mark, I think this is a lot of information for folks watching. At least it gets them a good start on, you know, obviously your background and story. why you like storage so much, some of the opportunities out there for the smaller, maybe the mom and pop or the smaller investor who's trying to figure out where they want to place money, place capital at this point in the cycle. We think storage is obviously a fantastic place to do that, if not the best place. Mark, how can folks find out more about what you do and get in contact with you if they have questions?
Well, I have a website that's designed to support the small investor with a lot of training on it free. And it's at creatingwealththroughselfstorage.com. And that's the name of the book that I wrote. It was published in 2015. It'll probably be updated next year. And then I also have paid for courses, but everything starts at creatingwealththroughselfstorage.com. Wonderful. And from that site, you can reach out and link with me if you have any specific questions.
Wonderful. And I have to be open here. Mark was one of the first ones that I found online who was teaching people how to invest in self-storage. I bought his book and I read it twice and then picked up all the rest of the materials, got on the email list and just connected with him over time. So I think his stuff is great. And Mark, you didn't mention the YouTube channel. So Mark has a YouTube channel as well, over 200 episodes talking about everything regarding self-storage. I highly recommend you check out his channel. You can just search for him on YouTube, Mark Helm, and subscribe to that because he's always putting out very good content. In fact, he put out a video on self-storage conversions and underwriting them. This is like a week ago or so, right, Mark? About a week ago?
Yes.
And this is June, July. So search for that time period and he gets into the numbers and underwriting self-storage using some software that he has created. So I highly recommend you check out Mark's stuff. He's great and really good at what he does. So yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Mark, thank you, Chris. You're providing a real service to the industry.
Well, thank you.
This is by far the best thing a small investor can get in my opinion. And for you to provide for, at no cost, a lot of quality people who know what they're talking about. I think I know what I'm talking about. That's a real service to the space. So
absolutely. That's my goal. So thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it. Thank you for being on. And we will talk soon. I want to have you on again in the near future. So thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate it. All right. That was Mark Helm. Please reach out to him, pick up his book, Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage. I have all of his links to his website, YouTube channel, LinkedIn profile will be in the description for this episode. I'm Chris, host of the Storage Investor Show. Reach out to me. I want to know more about what you want to hear coming up in future episodes. My number, my email address is Chris, K-R-I-S, Chris@storageinvestorshow.com. Shoot me an email. Love to hear from you. Gather some feedback and just kind of figure out what you guys want to hear in future episodes. All right. That's it for now, everyone. I'm Chris. Talk to you soon.